like to call to order the Business, Industry, and Jobs Committee for February 4th, 2009. And we are looking forward to hearing a report today from the BioBusiness Alliance on Destination 2025. And a number of us at this table had the opportunity to hear this plan unveiled last week at the History Center to a standing room only crowd that really represented leaders in academia, within the public and private sector, which is really key to developing this plan, is having all of those members involved. And it was very impressive to see the number of people who were there that night presenting, representing our major corporations, having the University of Minnesota represented. Deed was there as well. And I think that what we're going to hear today is a blueprint that is being proposed of how do we really drive tech-based economic development, particularly in the biosciences in the state. What's important, I know we've talked about this before at this table, is that we always think of Minnesota as we're leading. And that's really great to to think about, and we've done some very, very important things in the state and been very successful. The question is, that was then, this is now, where are we going? What signs do we have that perhaps this particular sector is slowing down, but what is the opportunity? I think that's the important thing. Senator Megson, if you would like to say a few words, because I know that this committee, we have had several discussions on in all of this, as we look at this economic crisis, what is our opportunity within this committee? What is our role? And that I know is reaching out and listening to our business community. So, Senator Metzen.
Well, thank you very much, Chairman Saltzman. I, too, was at the get-together. It was a standing room only. What a nice crowd. But obviously, we're looking, have to certainly look ahead at the challenging times and look for opportunities and not for and not go back. We have to go forward. And I just want to make it clear that this committee, I think a lot of the state and certainly the legislature is looking kind of firsthand at this committee because of the our goals and objectives here with the jobs and business and industry themes. So people are looking to us for leadership, and that's why you people are doing a pretty good job, but a very good job. So we're going to – and another thing, we just got to make it clear that it's not a Republican committee or a DFL committee. This is a people's committee, and we're pro-jobs. We're pro-jobs. We understand that the engine that creates the jobs is the business community. So we're going to make that very clear that we're here to help in any way we can. So that's the theme. And things that you folks have for us to streamline government or make it a little easier, we're here to help, you know, whether it be the bioscience stuff or if you have ways of, like, a lot of this rulemaking stuff troubles me, where a business has to go through hoops and loops and, yeah, you know, go 2-3 years, 4 years sometimes to get clearance to do what they want to do. So I keep reaching out to have the business community suggest ways that we can make life easier for in that respect too. So I guess that's it for now, but thank you for your efforts, and let's move forward, and we look forward to your report this afternoon.
Thank you, Senator Metzen. And I think that's an important point, is that, you know, there are a number of people in the legislature who have worked in industry and have some excellent background. And for some of us, we are ready to learn. So please think of this as an opportunity to share that with us. So at this time, I'd like to welcome Dale Wallstrom, who is the CEO of the BioBusiness Alliance, and Steve Dahl, who is with Deloitte Consulting, to present this report. And would you like us to ask questions as you're going along or tend to get through it? Or would you like to go through a section and then maybe pause for questions?
Senator Saltzman, we'd like to go through like a brief introduction and just kind of get everybody on the same page. And then once we get into the meat of the recommendations, then we'd like to open it up and have questions flow as you have them, because we want to make sure that there's an understanding.
Very good.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. My name is Dale Wallstrom. I'm with the BioBusiness Alliance. This Destination 2025, and I'll just very quickly refresh your memory. We've been coming here now for a few years. We were kicked off about 4 years ago. We had three phases to our organization.
So could you pull the mic a little closer? Thank you.
We had better?
Yes.
We had three phases of development to the organization. The first phase was the assessment phase. We published that in 2006, which is where we said, you know, things weren't exactly going in the direction we wanted them to go. And we then set out on phase two, which is called, is now branded Destination 2025, which is a visioning roadmap. And phase one got us to the point of saying, this is where we are. Phase two is this is where we need to go. And that's what we're going to present to you today. And we're entering phase three. Phase three is the implementation phase. It's a long-term implementation. We don't want you to think that that this is it. You know, this is really just a start. And that the things that we're going to present are not going to happen overnight. It takes a long time. And there are large numbers of people involved already, and that will continue to grow. So with that, I will just a couple of things real quick for introduction. I'm going to skip over that. It's in your packet. For setup, just four things we wanted to say. One is when we're in times of crisis, which we felt we were in 2006. It's just become more apparent now. But in times of crisis, you need a plan. Telling people to get their heads wrapped around. In the time of renewal or when you're starting to come out of that, you need specific things you can work on. Hence the recommendations that are coming out of 2025 because they're tangible. We want you to all to know that all the negative press that we all hear every day, we don't subscribe to that very much. We think that we have a great opportunity and great resources in the state to turn this around and move forward. Rapidly. And the train has not left the station, so to speak. You've all heard that before. And the last is that we do believe, however, it's time for us to be very impatient, make decisions, and move forward because, in fact, we will miss out on some fantastic opportunities if we don't step up to them. I'm not going to read all these. These are, as Senator Salzman alluded to, these are some of the community leaders that drove the core of governance. Process, people help direct the process and help us get at it. And you can see they represent large companies, all our academic institutions, including Mayo and whatnot. We also want to make sure you're aware that there are over 600 people from around the world who are involved in this process. We had people from several countries as well as several other states. In fact, one of the primary authors is from Kansas because it turns out the world leader one of the world's leaders in, or I should say, U.S. leaders in animal health in the United States is in Kansas. So he happens to have partnerships here. So we went that far as to reach out. We also had 40 stakeholder meetings around the state where we actively went out and sought input, and all with the idea of doing two things, getting the best data, the latest data, to make sure we're headed in the right direction, and number two, to make darn sure that we were getting ownership and buy-in along the way. So when it came to the implementation phase, we had about 600 people ready to get on board with us and help with implementation. So that is where we are today. So with that, I'm going to introduce Steve Dahl, who is our partner with Deloitte. And Steve's going to go quickly through the process. I want to just make the point that Steve and his team have been a phenomenal partner. And I really appreciate everything they've done. So Steve.
Thank you, Dale, and thanks, committee members and Madam Chair, for having us here today and opportunity to talk about Destination 2025. And I'm just going to go through for a couple of minutes and describe the process we've gone through to get to this point and try to keep that relatively quick so we can get into the kind of the meat of the recommendations and what that means going forward. A little background on kind of what we've done and how it relates. I guess to me, I relate best to be able to describe this is a public-private partnership, Bio-Business Alliance, and the whole Destination 2025. And that's very powerful. It's also very difficult to manage and pull off and also to keep together over the long run. But it's also very critical. And by way of example, I think about a consultant like myself and say, what's important in my business or our business to decide whether we locate somewhere, whether we grow somewhere, whether we leave somewhere. It comes down to, you know, a lot of fundamental items such as, you know, is there a hub airport? We travel a lot. There has to be a strong hub airport. And if there isn't one, you know, you don't see a big presence. So public sector, big play in that case. I think a number of other businesses and everyone has similar aspects I think about. There has to be a strong academic community, a good business school, graduate, undergraduate, be able to, and talented professors to do research with and draw a talent pool from. So good, educated, smart people that we can draw from and work with. Again, so there's academia, very important, critical role if you're going to be a world-class at attracting the business and growing it. Third is a strong business client, good Fortune 1000 companies, good incentives, and so forth, so private sector. So the point is that in order to be world-class at any market segment, there are those types of things that need to come into alignment between academia, private sector, and public sector. And it's with that kind of a focus and mindset we went into BioBusiness Alliance work and the Destination 2025 to understand what are those things, what are those things for the life sciences community, and how well aligned are we, and what we, and where we're out of alignment, what do we need to do to get in alignment? Because it really takes all three of those things together to become and sustain world class. It's not only attracting business, but retaining those that we have. So how did we go about this? What were kind of the core elements of the work that's been done? First was a white paper, so on the far left hand. And really what this entailed was doing a lot of research from experts in Deloitte, experts in industry, academia, not only from Minnesota but all around the globe, and coming up with what are the trends, what are the technologies, where are these markets going? And getting a base understanding of those. That also included, sending out questionnaires, the focus groups that were described, a lot of reviews, and really trying to get our arms around for each of the six market segments we're talking about within the life science community, what does the future look like from a global perspective? So there are six white papers, one for each market segment, that have been completed as part of this project. The next piece is then the vision document, and what this really entailed was now that we have that, let's compare that to the strengths and weaknesses within Minnesota. Let's look at where there are opportunities for expansion and growth and where are there threats for a business to be relocated out of the state or to be shut out of an industry, so forth. So we looked at those items and then came up with a vision and a series of recommendations for each of those individual industry segments. So that's the vision document. So six of those, one for each market. What we're talking about today and what you have should have in your packet is the roadmap, which this kind of pulls it together, one document that looks at a variety of things. One, it looks at the convergence of those activities. So in other words, what is the impact of recommendations in the future for decisions made, investments made in food to renewable energy? What is the impact of decisions made, investments, and so forth in biopharma with medical devices? So it looks at both the convergence across these market segments as well as what I'll call the core elements or core recommendations that are critical across the board when you look at these different areas. So I'll talk in a second about core and contingent and what that means. So that's where we are, or we're, as of January 28th, we rolled out the first version of the roadmap. It's a living, breathing document. There will be future versions as life and markets play out. So version one of the roadmap released in January. And now we're in this education implementation stage, and to take this around the state and actually drive it to creating businesses and creating jobs. So I talked a little bit. I mentioned core and contingent. It's an important concept to understand as you look at the roadmap and kind of get a feel for how all the pieces fit together. Really what we do is we take and look at the current position, so where is the state today, and then we look at various models or visions of the future. So one thing we all know about the future, especially when we're looking out to 2025, is we don't know what it'll be like, right? We know that there are very likely scenarios that will play out, and we need to evaluate and look at those. And that's really what the strategic flexibility framework or model does for us in the work. So in other words, if you're starting a business or looking to expand a business in Minnesota, what are the impacts of various scenarios as you think about your strategy and what elements need to be there? So scenario A might be, what does it look like if there's a boom? If there's an economic boom time, what does that mean to what you need to do to grow and expand your business in Minnesota? Scenario B might be, what happens if we're in a time of downturn or slippage? What does that mean? What are the business implications, the things we need to think through and plan for? Scenario C might be, we look at what if the implications of climate change are dramatic in that period of time. What does that mean to our business versus what does it mean if the climate change really doesn't have much of an impact at all? So looking at, again, setting the boundaries and understanding kind of at this extreme and at this extreme, what would my world look like and what would I need to have in place to be successful in growing and develop a business? Scenario D might be looking at very specifically what happens in a time of a disaster. So a shock to the system. It could be a natural disaster, a man-made disaster. What does that do to your business? What things do you need to have in place? What do you need to have thought through? So that's really kind of what we look for when we're looking at the future, is not looking at any one pinpoint, but looking at a range of viable scenarios that paint kind of boundaries of possibilities. And then coming back and looking at what are some optimal strategies around each of those and what are the recommendations and that need to be in place to make those successful. And so when you look at the boxes on the rectangles on the far left, the blue boxes, they're all the same color, meaning that would be a recommendation or a situation that needs to be in place no matter what. So no matter what future plays out for this industry or for your business, we have to have this and be world class at it, or otherwise it really doesn't matter. You know, the rest of the stuff all depends on that. So think about, for us as individuals, it would be, you know, if we're going to have 30 jobs over a lifetime, well, an example of a core thing you can say you need to have when you're younger is a very strong education. That would be an example of a core element in a strategy. You know, place that in a business scenario, and that gets back to some of those three examples I gave in our particular business. So that is a core strategy. It represents your safest investment, but also your most critical investment. If you don't do it, the rest of it really won't play out in a world-class manner. The other rectangles you see there represent, you know, different colors based on different scenarios. In other words, these are items that will become critical or important depending on if the world is in a boom scenario or a slippage scenario, but depending on if climate change matters or it doesn't matter, depending on if there's a natural disaster or there is no natural disaster. So these are items that when you look at different scenarios become critical in one or two, but not all. So these are what we call contingent recommendations instead of core recommendations. So they're recommendations that need to be understood. We need to determine what we need to do to keep options open in that situation. And then it's a portfolio of options that we need to manage over time. And as the actual world and market unfolds, be able to say, now it's time to execute on this one or to divest of it. So we may have purchased a piece of land to keep an option open on a future plant expansion, and then we determine at some point we want to actually build or it's time to divest because we're not going to do that. So that's core and contingent, and the recommendations that you hear today, we're talking about a lot of core recommendations, but there's also a whole portfolio of contingent items that we manage and work with as the future unfolds. Dale?
Okay. I'm going to walk through, and I think most of you have seen this before, hopefully. You've all seen it, I hope. This is the way we look at the life science community, the life science industry. And basically, the top box represents the where the corporations lie, the companies lie. And this is where most job creation occurs, most economic wealth occurs there. And this is where we're going to spend most of our time today, because we'd like to talk about what the research showed as being the primary areas where we think, where we know now that they're evolving as we look out over the next 20 years and where Minnesota can play. The bottom three boxes, though, represent what we call community capability. And we will talk about these, but these alone are worth a session on their own, because these three boxes make up what are really the capability of the community to attract industry to be able to grow and expand locally. So it ranges all over the map from our knowledge, enabling knowledge clusters to the foundational policies that we have in place, and, of course, the collaborations between the three sectors and the commercialization catalysts to turn that knowledge into new jobs and new companies. So we will build on this. A couple of things. I'm going to bounce over these quickly because I don't want to spend a lot of time on them. But when we looked at, it's important, we think, for you to understand a little bit of how we define these recommendations. We look first at, Are they strategic? Do they leverage existing strengths? We don't want to start from the ground up everywhere. We want to start over, or build on what we have. Second, are they serving something that is moving towards a sustainable thing? It's not a shot in the dark or a one-time shot, but rather it's building something. Three, is it have broad state appeal? Does it work for the Iron Range as well as it works for the Worthington area and everything in between? Does it have a short-term and a long-term, meaning we're trying to get job creation going as quickly as we can? At the same time, we don't want to just do it for a short-term boom. We want to do it for a long-term sustainable outcome. You will hear us talk a lot about this because companies are these are defined as our growth stages of companies. All along this continuum, companies need different kinds of environments to be successful, ranging from that very early stage when somebody's trying to discover something new and keep it alive long enough to keep it alive, all the way to the point of your 100-year-old company that's trying to reinvent itself so it stays alive. And there are certain things that a community needs to offer in order all along that continuum to make it a good place. In fact, I'm going to take a risk here, and I'm going to say that the analogy that we used with the house about an hour and a half ago, and it seemed to work okay, and we'll try it here and see if it works, is that we had a the analogy we kind of have in our heads about this is that the growth stage, reinvention stage companies are kind of like a tree, right? I mean, they have all kinds of ideas, all kinds of research going on, as well as the university system, and they start dropping seeds all over. Those seeds become the beginnings of new companies. It could be in the form of a creative person who leaves to start another company. It could be the form of an idea that they license out. But they become seeds for new company creation. Those companies, as they get bigger, their branches start to reach across state boundaries. They start to reach across the oceans and become global in nature. And they drop those seeds into communities that have the best environment to grow, where the ideas are. There's ground to catch it. There's people taking care of it and nurturing it. And that's what we're really working towards, is to try to make sure that Minnesota, in the areas and industries that we're going to talk to you about, is the best place to grow those seeds and create new growth and new opportunity. So I didn't see too many people smiling, so it must have gone all right.
Yes. But,
all right. The second slide to kind of frame how we pick these recommendations is the following, that and we picked medical devices and biopharma as an example because medical devices today in the bioscience industry represents about 70% of our jobs, if you exclude farming. The biopharma represents a very tiny amount, yet biopharma represents a high growth area in terms of knowledge. It is the area, which we'll talk about more later, where many of the new things that are shaping the future are going to come from. We have a well-established cluster in the medical device area. People know that. People all over the world know that. We think it's hard to sustain that because we've had a bit of a slippage in our applications research, in our research capability in our university systems. So we've kind of slipped to moderate. We would rank ourselves as moderate in that area in terms of capability. In the area of industry, we are very strong. We would submit that because of that, it's going to be harder to sustain that cluster zone here unless we beef up our academic capabilities. So therefore, one of our recommendations is to beef up our academic capability. Likewise,
from
down
that point,
in biopharma.
Mr. Welch, you know, to me, this slide really is extremely critical because I think there is the perception that because we have the industry all the industry giants, we've created this environment that's going to allow that to really continue to grow. And then we see other areas where because we don't have the industry, we think we're not doing something. So I think, you know, for this committee, it's important to see that, like, relationship, that what we see is not always what we need to know, and it presents opportunities for us to change this. So that, you know, like, it's really struck me as very important.
We agree with you totally, Senator Salzman. This is kind of the key message you're trying to send, is that when we went through the process, we looked at where are we strong, where are we weak, what can we leverage, what do we have to supplement, where can we take strengths and combine them to create something new. So as an example, if you look at biopharma versus in industry, biopharma, we're very strong in a university level, both Mayo, the U of M, in developing new knowledge in the area of biologics, biopharma-based products. We don't have a commercial sector, so right now, frankly, they have to leave the state to commercialize that. They really don't have a choice. It's not their fault. However, we have a very strong industry sector in the area of medical devices. And when you look at a slide that's coming up here shortly, you'll see that those two industries are converging. And as they converge, if we are successful, when we are successful at building the right relationships and the right policies to take advantage of our two strengths, we can dominate that industry if we so choose to do so. We just have to take action and move on it. And I will be very clear with you, that process has started. There are teams of people meeting, trying to look at building those into an actionable industry. So this is just to give you an idea how what we went through. I'm going to clear the, for those of you who are very interested in food, I'm just going to tell you we're not going to talk much about it today. And the reason is this. It struck us. It struck us when we went through the this process how important it is to all industries. It is whether you're talking the medical device industry and prevention, or you're talking about renewable energy or renewable materials for raw stock for creation of new industries, or you're talking about growing starting farming industry, spelled PHARMING, it doesn't matter. Food and the growing of plants fits in all of them. So we knew it was important. We just didn't understand how important until about the last 3 weeks. It sort of popped out at us. So what we've done is we've assembled a team of people from academia and the private sector who are helping us to really put some meat around this. And we'll be back to you with round two of this document sometime in the not-too-distant future with some pretty meaty discussions just around the food industry. So we apologize for that, but it's actually good news because it's a strength of ours. Okay, as we laid out the industry, we broke it into two sections. It kind of naturally broke into two things. We call one the medical technology cluster. It includes animal health, the biologics, biopharma, and the medical device. The other is we entitled agriculture and biomass cluster. And this includes renewable materials, renewable energy, and food. We're going to jump into medical technology right away. And, Senator Salzman, this is that point in time where we would welcome a dialogue. We'd like to make sure that we're clear as we're going along because and your questions are answered because we are now moving into recommendations. We start out with a little bit of a story first on each one of the two sectors, the two cluster zones, and a story around medical technology, which includes animals, biologics, and biotech, biopharma, and medical device, is that these industries, if you look at this top bar, the top arrow, this one, you look at that top arrow, that is right now the area where we dominate in current technology, meaning that current technology that is based on what's called active implantable technology, which is implantable computers that are applied. This is an area where 97% of all the products in the world come out of Minnesota. We are acknowledged across the globe as the dominant industry, or the dominant site for that industry. We would be called a mega cluster in that area. It's also an area that has, where the growth has slowed. And so, in fact, some of the markets have actually started to shrink a little bit. So it's an area that is, and there's many reasons for that. Some is market saturation. Some is just that cost controls. There's many reasons. The center bar, the pharma biologics, is an area that we do not participate in hardly at all on the commercial side. We have very few companies. We have a lot of knowledge, though. Between Mayo and U of M, we were number six, as I mentioned, already, in the creation of new molecules in 2006. This is an area that is the source of much of the new thinking and the new opportunities for where the personalized medicine, I'm sure you've all heard of that, is being driven to a large extent out of this area. Area of high growth, growing about 15 to 20% per year, depending on whose report you read. Nonetheless, it's high growth. We're not participating in it. It is shaping the device industry, however, because it's converging. So we have, so that's an important point. The second one, or third one rather, animal health, is an area that we're solid in that, especially in greater Minnesota. Wilmer, Moorhead, Worthington, out in greater Minnesota, we have a lot of large, significant companies in that area. Good manufacturing capability. We have a strong academic capability as well. This is also converging with medical devices and with the biopharma biologics. And in fact, when you deal with this pharma biologics area, biopharma biologics, pharma, that technology doesn't really care whether you're working with an animal or you're working with a person. It's fundamentally the same thing. So if you can work with a gene or you can work with a cellular engineering or whatever, it's at that level. So the convergence that's taking place across these three is substantial. Our message, our storyline message in this is that medical devices is going to maintain strong growth. It'll be a strong industry. It's not going away. It will slow in growth, so it won't give us the kind of growth opportunities the community here is accustomed to unless we are actively going out and pursuing more. Pharma biologics, we will miss that if we don't focus on getting that industry established here. We will also run the risk of losing the device industry as it converges over time, not months or even a couple years, but over many years we run that risk. And animal health is a great industry that we can leverage to leverage manufacturing and to do the crossover with humans. So great area for growth. We added this in because 2 days ago this came out. You may have seen it. Michigan is retooling their automotive industry to go after medical device components. I want you to know that there are very few communities in the state that don't have medical device manufacturing being done in them, and they're targeting us. This graph right here is to tell you, this is the same graph we're going to present to you on all of them, and the way to look at this graph is follows. Each one of these industries that we're going to talk about is at a different place in time, a different place in maturity, and there's no one formula for any one of them. So we have a specific strategy that we're recommending to how to think about those industries so we can apply appropriate kinds of, whether it be policy or organizational efforts or whatever. There's a way we're thinking about it. And so this slide, in this particular case, we divided it up, or we categorized them as create, retain and expand, or recruit, meaning that either we create a new company, we expand what we have and try to retain it and keep it here, or we recruit. So as an example, in the area of medical devices, somebody, I guess I'm not sure if it was in this committee or not, but somebody asked or made a comment earlier that we were, I think it was you, Senator Salzman, made a comment about we thought we were strong and we would have the cluster. In the area of convergent technology, I can assure you that many of those convergent startup companies that our companies are working on are starting in other communities because they have to go where the knowledge base is. So in this particular case, we're trying to focus on how do you retain that so those new industries, those new companies that they're starting or divisions that they're starting are happening in our state, mm-hmm. not in another state because of the knowledge accessibility or the infrastructure accessibility. Recruit, in some cases we have to go get them because we don't have it. And create is a dominant theme for us, especially in this area. So as we go through, you'll see this. And then what we'll do is along each side, we'll talk about specific things we'd like you to be aware of that either in some cases you can help or in some cases either through your influence or through your policy setting or in some cases it's just for information. In this particular one, medical devices, our first recommendation or thing that we really want to make sure happens.
So question from Senator Bonhoff maybe before you
yes.
get started.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
I'm very intrigued by the process and by your approach to identifying the various stages in each sector. And it occurs to me, you know, you're just talking about this, but we have many other strong sectors in our state. We have retail, you know, Targets here, Best Buy's here. We have manufacturing, and that it would be so valuable for us to go through this exercise in many sectors. And I'm wondering, where did the process come from? Is this something that you think other industries are using? Did you create it? Is it Deloitte? And can you say a little bit more about this process?
I'll start then. Okay, the process is it's a mixture. Some of it we created. And we put the process in place based on our own understanding of what needed to be done. We were fortunate enough to grab a hold of or become associated with Steve, and he talked about the strategic flexibility process. It's something that helped us to frame it and take and put it into a structure that is applicable to any industry. And I might add, when I'm going to turn over to Steve now, but I'd like to make one more comment to that when he's done.
Okay. Thanks. A couple of important things that hopefully you're seeing as we're going through this, and one is that we talked a lot about convergence, and we talked a little bit about alignment as well. And again, to be the point of, to really be world class at any market segment, we need to have strong alignment between public sector, private sector, and industry, and making sure that the right things are there to grow and thrive that industry or segment over the long run. And so that public-private partnership and that approach in here is very difficult to manage, but also is very critical when you look at what it takes to drive this going forward, and making sure that we have the right pieces together. We're not looking at each one in isolation. Similar point is when you look at across the market segments, a lot of people have looked at, or states have looked at, let's come up with a strategy. How do we deal with a strategy for the medical device segment or another segment? And what happens with that is then you miss this whole dialogue we've been talking about of the convergence, because each one is very critical and important on their own. But when you start seeing the disruptive technologies and trends that cross over, that oftentimes is then what drives the future. And so that part of what we're talking about, I think, to me, is very powerful to focus on and think about, not only for growing business, but retaining. And this, now, it applies to, you can take the same approach and apply it to any business or any industry or cluster of industries as well. So it's very transferable as a framework to use for other planning. And yet it is as basis a Deloitte methodology called the Strategic Flexibility Framework.
Thank you. And then a follow-up from Senator.
Yeah, Madam Chair, just another comment. I particularly liked the different scenarios where you have to identify, in a growth environment, this would be your approach and this. And it occurred to me that, I hope the federal government is utilizing a similar framework as they plan how to, move forward. So I think that we all can learn from that process.
Thank you.
I'd like to also add to Senator Bonhoff's question in that there is a need. We recognize that we're focused on life sciences right now, and we're not going to talk about it today, but in the roadmap document that you have, there is a recommendation here, which is a one overarching recommendation that we are making. Because we're not alone in recognizing we need to do this. Many other organizations across the state have recognized it as well. And that recommendation is that we have a statewide science and technology plan. And so there is a group of people who have been meeting for a few months. They represent MNSCU, U of M, Mayo University, I already said U of M, Life Science Alley, Minnesota High Tech, MinNano, who are coming forward with a proposal to how to think about and look at science and technology in total. Because you will notice as we go through this that you cannot separate out one industry from another. What is making most of this possible today is the fact that the high-tech industry is enabling it. The computer industry, the software industry, and many others are the enablers of life science. Things like bioinformatics that we'll talk about couldn't do that a few years ago. It's because the computer technology is advanced. We're now able to do it. So you can't separate them. Therefore, you can't just pick one industry over another. We have to look at how they interact with each other. So we strongly endorse that approach.
Thank you very much. And Senator Rosen, who I want to recognize, has also been a leader in the past in this area, and I hope she will mentor all of us as we move forward in this area. Senator Rosen?
Madam Chair.
Well, she has been, and I just want to know that.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Mr. Wallstrom, the group that you were just referring to, is there some recommendations, or are we going to hear about the recommendations or anything that has come out of that group? Are they going to be bringing something forward for us?
What I would say, Representative Rosen, is that I don't know that you will see recommendations this year. It's too early. to the last thing any of us want to do who are part of that is to come out with a recommendation that isn't thoroughly thought through and looked at with a level of integrity, with a level of integrity. However, the one recommendation I'm pretty confident might come forward here in the next few weeks will be a recommendation, and I know everybody will hate this, but a recommendation to actually go out and do a detailed analysis of what has worked and not worked in other communities that have tried such a thing. And there are 30 other states who have already done a science and technology plan or are in the process of it now. We've all heard about Ohio. We've all heard about North Carolina. Some of their stuff works, some of it doesn't work. And we'd like to we think we should be designing a program that takes advantage of what they have learned.
Madam Chair. Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Olson, why would we not like that? I would think that we would be, well, yeah, there's funding an issue, I'm sure, but I do think there is a lot of merit in looking at what the other states have done and the direction. And I do think there is a tremendous amount of merit of listening to what the direction that all these entities are focusing on. And I would be very interested in, and I'm sure the Madam Chair would be very interested in getting a meeting together and talking about the direction and getting a more global outlook on this process. That's what we're looking for as a legislative body.
Well, Mr. Wallstrom?
Please, yes. I didn't mean it to be offensive in any way. What I meant was that we've heard across the state, we hear frequently, we don't need another committee, we don't need another study, we need action. And at this stage of the game in this area, we think we still do need some more studies. So I was just referring to that. I know the team would be thrilled to sit down with the group and talk to whoever would like to have that meeting that can be set up.
And perhaps to respond to that is that that is a need to have a good plan. In the meantime, what can we be doing when we don't have that plan? And I think that's where we feel a sense of urgency given the economic climate. Are there some things in this report that are, call them baby steps, but things that we can be doing to address the needs that are coming to us from the industries while we are mapping out a better strategy than just doing sort of, well, let's try this and try that, perhaps is a way so we're doing both, but also with a sense of urgency that it's not a five-year process, but and there are a number of plans out there, and I think there's an opportunity for us to learn from them. So very good points, everyone. So we'll go back to the medical device slide.
Yeah, I would just comment, too, if I could. On that point, while this roadmap and recommendations are focused on the six market segments we've talked about, a number of the recommendations, a number of the capabilities that are required are pretty far-reaching. So when you think of the broader science and technology community, they do reach to some of the core needs on a broader basis as well.
Good. Okay, Mr. Wallstrom.
Okay, thank you. And to close it out, if you can frame that question, we will get the right people together, but I will wait for some interaction to figure out the best way to do that, okay? So with the medical device industry, the recommendations we're making here are, number first and foremost, is to we would like to expand the U of M funding for Medical Device Center. That is not necessarily a specific asset for funding. It's that we want it funded more, meaning that we would like the University of Minnesota is leading that initiative to figure out the best way to do that. They are looking at it, and they'll come forward with any requests that they might have. Second is we do want to make sure we have an appropriate tax environment for growth and reinvention level. Those are things that we'll talk later, like things like R&D tax credit, those kinds of things. We need programs for startup companies. This is an area where we're really not doing well right now. We are doing well in certain areas, such as very targeted areas, such as in medical device for active implantables. But in general, the world is hurting in areas startup right now, but there are certain areas where we really need help. And then finally, appropriate incentives to attract new investment to the state in areas where we are not the leading center of knowledge creation. And we can go into lots of detail on all of those. The point I want to make here is this is a strategy around medical devices. If you notice the color of this graph for biologics and biopharmaceuticals, that's very different. The reason for that is we don't have an established industry. We have an established research capability. So there's a much greater focus on create. So on the left side of that flow diagram is where you'd see more attention played to the kinds of environmental issues we need to create an environment for startup companies. We do have seeds here. We do have companies here. We have companies like Upshur Smith, GenMab, and others as well who work in this area today, and those are great places to start because it's always cheaper and faster to grow what we have than it is to try to start from new. So that's an area we always will look at focusing on. We also know in this particular area we do need to do some recruiting because in this area we are going to have to recruit a company or two that allows us to get the critical mass to begin to create the trained workforce, the infrastructure at a company level to be able to spawn off and grow new ones. So there is a need for some recruitment. So in this area, we're focusing primarily then on tax policy or programs that support the discovery to growth stages of that, again, that flow diagram. Those are more on the left. And appropriate incentives to attract, to help those who are on the front lines trying to get businesses to come to move here to do just that. Okay, animal health. Animal health is more like medical devices in the sense that we have an established industry. Mm-hmm. We have great opportunity for creating new companies. So therefore, a balanced approach to try to get policies in place and programs in place that give us more diversity across that entire range is our fundamental strategy that we're after. And some of those are, again, growth through reinvention and programs for startup. We don't have and you'll see this kind of common theme as you go through, that there are certain things at the policy level. I want to be clear about one thing, which I probably wasn't clear on before. many of the things that we're working on here don't require state involvement. Many of them can be handled by the private sector. They can be handled by the academic sector. So what we're putting here are things where we see a relationship to the role of the public sector, where they can help to make this work. So anyway, I want to make that clear. We're not covering all those things. If we would like to take time at another moment to discuss some of the other activities that are in place. As an example, in animal health, there is a team being led out of Worthington that is going to help us look at how to expand the spin-out of technology to create new companies. So there's that kind of thing happening as well. So moving on, our agricultural and biomass cluster is the last half. This is our Minnesota industry section. We have renewable materials, renewable energy, and food in this category. And first, moving into agricultural and biomass cluster and talking about that, there's a sort of the story behind this one is the following, and you probably know this better than we do, that this is an area that is in, it's very high demand. There's a lot of things happening in this area, and there's more things coming, meaning that there's a lot of existing markets such as lumber, paper, energy, that are using biomass from wood or from forests. There's also existing markets for human and animal food, also in energy that's creating demand for agricultural plants. There's also new markets that are coming in each of those areas for both forest and ag-based products, such as bioactives, where you're extracting chemicals from bark and turning them into nutraceuticals or food additives. We have some startup companies in the state that are doing that right now. There's another one for renewable materials, which is a high-growth industry at the moment. It's taking chemicals from plants, wood and plants, and turning them into monomers, which are turned into polymers to become plastics and chemicals and other things. They are, in effect, becoming the biomass industry is, in effect, becoming the oil wells of the future, so to speak, which makes sense because you think oil comes from biomass. It's degraded over the last, primarily algae, but it's degraded over the last couple 100,000 years or more, and collect it underground, then we pump it out and put it back into our cars. So here we're trying to look at how do you take current biomass and just do a Superman-type thing and turn it into something overnight instead of over the course of hundreds of thousands of years. The reason that that's important is all these industries are going after the same raw stock. They all want trees. They all want egg products. That's creating demand for and price inflexibility. You see the erratic swings in the various foods and the issues that it causes. So this is an area where tremendous opportunity and tremendous problems to solve to make sure that it is sustainable. We believe strongly it is going to happen. So it's a matter of how do we participate. So we're starting, first of all, talking about renewable materials. We believe this is an area for Minnesota that is extremely exciting. And the reason for that is it's kind of starting here in many ways. You're just like the medical device industry started from spin-outs from Medtronic, and now there's been 170-some companies started from Medtronic. Here, renewable materials industry started with a spin-out from Cargill. That is actually part of Cargill and division of Cargill. But from that division of Cargill, there are now four more that have started. And the seeds are being planted all over from that one plant to create more of these types of companies locally. They just like in the device industry, they all started on the north side of the metropolitan area up in the Fridley and that area, and then have spread across the state over the course of years. These are all starting so far on the west side. They're all in the western part of the western suburbs right now. And they're starting to expand out. I think the latest one is actually in St. Paul. So there's a great opportunity here to accelerate that expansion. So what we are advocating for is that there are now many communities across the globe that are creating new chemistries from different plants that are being used to make these new products and materials. But an area that we can stake out, and this is again coming from working with the industry and academic people, is an area of engineering and manufacturing products from these materials. The reason we think that's very important is there is no community that can't take advantage of this if they choose to do so. There are all kinds of products, cups, paper, plates, or not paper now, but plates, clothes. You can begin to produce products from these materials anywhere. All you need is your basic extrusion, molding kinds of processes, and you retool them, and you begin to use this. So we are very bullish on this industry as an industry that Minnesota should be looking very hard at. To do that, of course, we need the typical kinds of programs that help companies to get over their hesitancy to get involved and to grow the market. As an example, one thing that would be very helpful is to incent the production, maybe through government contracts where you preferentially buy some of these kinds of materials. Like we have mandated 10% ethanol blend, and we've mandated wind for renewable energy. The same type of thing, only area of products that can come from this industry. Okay, food. We already talked about that. We'll be back. Renewable energy, there's so many options, it's very difficult to figure out where to even start, actually. But we want to make the following setup points before we actually get to our graph, and that is that we have looked enough at other countries and other communities that have really moved heavily into clean, green, and renewable, and we believe that that movement into that direction is real, and there is tremendous opportunity to create an economy around doing this type of industry. Specifically, we would like to advocate and really encourage consumption reduction or reduction in consumption. The reason for that is that most of you, I think, have seen the computer model we did a couple years ago with Sandia National Lab. We have yet to find a scenario with that model where we can make the 25x25 goal that we're all shooting for if we don't reduce consumption and if we don't take advantage of other sources of energy than what we're currently focusing on. And that leads me to item number two. We're advocating that Minnesota really step up and become a leader in this management of biomass. What we mean by that is that biomass is, in effect, a source of energy, a source of molecules to be used to do many things in the future, and it will become a bigger and bigger part of our global society. There are not available today good systems for managing that, good business systems, good systems for planning. So we would like Minnesota to step up and become just that. In fact, Georgie Hilkner from the Department of Energy Security is in the room, I believe. But we just had a conversation. Tomorrow there's a group of us going out to Sandia National Lab to begin the process of trying to work with the National Lab System to begin to put those kinds of decision-making tools in place so that they're accessible to you, to the private sector, and to the academic sector to help us work through the issues. We think that's critical. Second, in order to drive that process, there's an area that we are currently not utilizing even close to its maximum potential, and that is the area of combustible biomass. And anytime we implement something, we always need something we can focus on to say, let's do it here, figure it out, and then we can apply it more broadly. We believe that combustible biomass, so what we mean by that is just what it says, burning it. You take countries like Sweden as an example. Sweden right now, about 92% of their heat, their source of heat, comes from combustion of biomass. It's used to produce electricity. It's used to produce hot water for heating of homes. It's just used in many areas. In our state, we currently do not have a policy around using biomass for heat. In fact, we don't have a policy around heat production. We have a policy around liquid fuel. We have a policy around electricity. The 25% and 30% wind by 2025, I believe it is. And we have other policies like that. We have nothing for heat that I'm aware of, and we couldn't find it. We know that there's a bill coming forward to you this year. We hope that you'll take a good hard look at that. It's being sponsored by someone else, but we're fully behind it. Why we're excited about that is that industry is now, meaning there is no invention required. The products are here. It's a matter of organizing the industry, and there are opportunities for job creation everywhere from the manufacturer of the stoves, the manufacturer of the boilers, the manufacturing of the solar collectors, to all the way through the harvesting, the processing, the storage, the distribution, the lawyers that need to process the contracts, all the way through. And it's right now. And there are communities out there who are already figuring it out. Northeast U.S. is moving like the wind right now. Upper New York is moving very quickly to implement this, as well as other parts of the northeastern U.S. Anyway.
Well, on that point, I guess that we have also talked within our education group, because Senator Saxhog is very involved in this and has talked with us in terms of the school trust lands as a source of biomass. And that would obviously be wonderful for us to be able to reap the benefit as well as those investments. So I think some of us at the table, Senator Bonhoff, Senator Koch, Senator Gerlach, who sit on our education committee, are sort of hearing a lot about biomass within education. So question from Senator Metzen.
Yeah, we all know that we recognize the renewable energy challenges going forward, but, we're to recruit and get up startup companies, and you mentioned a couple of times earlier about incentives. I mean, we're in competition with not only all the other states in the country, but nationally, and I was wondering if you folks looked at what types of incentives could or should the state be offering? Would it be examples like broadening what the so-called Job Z zones, forgiveness of ad valorem taxes in communities for 3-4 years? Maybe didn't get that far, but that would be helpful if your group or somebody would help us. Because we are, it's going to be very competitive in this particularly, well, all these areas, but I think of this renewable energy as, going forward. And what should we be doing? I mean, we'd say we're nice people and It's a beautiful climate here, you know, 30 below. Please come to Minnesota and do this renewable stuff. But it seems to me we need something to compete other than our good looks and the nice, you know, people in Minnesota. So, but did you go into that next depth of what we can offer as a state, or should we not be offering anything? It seems to me we have to do something to be competitive, and I don't know what other states are doing, but I would think they're trying to get more
incentivized.
What's that word? You say it out loud for everybody.
Incentivized?
Yeah, that's good. That's a four syllables. Yeah. Mr. Wallstrom, maybe you could, or Westrom, if you guys ever, if your folks have ever thought, I'm sure you've thought of it, but do you have any recommendations in that area?
Well, we actually have a slide we're going to talk a little bit about, because a lot of these things overlap. I'm sorry, is Senator Salzman, okay? Okay. A lot of them overlap. These industries overlap. So some of the same kinds of incentives, depending on your strategy by industry, whether it's create, okay, there's certain kinds of strategy if you're trying to create companies, you're trying to keep and expand different ones. So there's a continuum. So if we could maybe have an increased dialogue on that in a minute when we kind of get to that slide, that would be great. However, in the area of renewable energy, we would like to really advocate for market creation. There's a way to incentivize organizations to install the equipment and buy the product is a way, just like we did on ethanol, just like we did on wind, just like we've done in many other markets. You know, if you can create a demand, the private sector will come, and the types of incentives or environment will change depending on that. So if you can incentivize like crazy, if there's no market, it doesn't really matter. You know, you have to have a market for it. And the problem we have, like, again, I'll use biomass as an example, is that we have some markets. We have an industry here today. It's rather, frankly, I hope I'm not offending anybody in the audience, it's a bit disjointed. There are gaps in the capability to sustain that industry that they're struggling with, all the companies are struggling with. So if we could fill in that market and fill in the holes in it, the market will become healthier on its own with less incentive. We will still need to get back to you on that, and there are common ones we can talk about in a minute if that's acceptable.
Madam Chair,
excuse me, a question from Senator Bonoff.
With regard to creating a market, I would suggest that that's what we did when we set the renewable standard, that we then created a market because all of a sudden everybody had to reach a certain standard. And so that would be an example of creating a market. It didn't take money. It took policy.
Right.
And so if you go back on your diagrams, there's a page that lists what each sector provides, and under the foundational capabilities, you list education, infrastructure, and policy. And I think that's what you have to count on us for. We have to make sure the environment is there for education, and we're investing in that. We have to keep our infrastructure as strong as it can be, and I would assert that we've fallen down in that area, that, you know, we've now taken steps to correct it with, you know, the transportation, but there's other things that we need to do with regard to infrastructure. And then there's policy, and we as policymakers can design policy around doing just what you said.
Exactly. In fact, Senator Bonhoff, with the comment I made earlier about we don't have a criteria, a policy around heat generation right now. That would be something to be very helpful if we could create a policy to supplement what's already there in the area of heat creation. That would drive this market. And along those lines, though, once we create that market, then we still need, the startup companies still need the kind of support that we're talking about to get off the ground. So they work together. It's not all independent.
So on that point, how could we help you, Mr. Wallstrom, because that's probably in our energy committee. Is it something that we need to talk to chairs about that? Or are you on their agenda? Because that would be another policy committee. But you are really saying that this is something that we should be doing now. So if we can help with that and make those connections and create the need for that. I think there would be people at this table who could help. Does anyone sit on energy at this table? Very good. You have an
Madam
assignment.
Chair, both Senator Sparks and myself, I'm the lead Republican on it, and Senator Sparks sits on it also.
So Senator Rosen and Senator Sparks have an assignment to help you. So,
thank you. That would be very helpful. Thank you. Okay. So I'm moving on in the area of renewable energy. Sure. These are the same.
And a question for Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just so I'm clear, with regard to the renewable energy and heat, are you proposing that we physically burn biomass for heat, like wood? Or what are you talking about there?
Exactly. There are many ways to do that. It can be pulverized and blown in with coal, blended with coal in your large electricity producing plants. The city of St. Paul is powered right now primarily by wood. The district heating system in St. Paul burns, I forget how much, but a lot of wood. When the trees blow down during the storms during the summertime, most of it ends up over there and is being used as a source of heat. Rochester, same thing. They have established a district heating system that they put in. There are many opportunities in the individual home. One of the reasons we like this industry is that there's not a community in the state that doesn't have access to some form of combustible biomass. The typical response from people is, oh, it creates too much pollution. Not true. It's actually almost carbon neutral, because as long as you replant trees or you replant the biomass, because in the process of regrowing takes the carbon dioxide back or the carbon back out of the air. So it's in Sweden as an example, again, because we've studied them the most. Sweden has reduced their carbon footprint by 9%, which to a very large extent that was reduced by using combustion as a source and then having policies around replanting. And in fact, if anybody's interested, there's a team of us going over, private academics, et cetera, going over the first week of March to try to learn how they did that. And it would be fantastic to have some policy people come with if that were possible.
Very good, Senator Skoy.
I'm fascinating by this. I think it was in the 80s. A number of the school districts up in my area put in pelletized wood furnaces, and the policies changed, and they've since taken them all out. But now we're looking to go back that way again. That's very interesting.
I might add.
I think it's interesting too because I know Anderson. The Anderson Corporation in Bayport was getting steam from the King plant, and when they refitted the King plant, the coal-burning plant, they lost their energy source. And so they built a new combustible generator and are burning wood scraps that they're using. So it was very interesting to go out and see that. So, but it's interesting to hear how the trade-off, because you think of it as an environmental concern, but... Maybe continue, Mr. Wallstrom.
Okay. Our recommendations, just to think of, again, it gets back to the incentive programs that go along the continuum. We do that here. We think that there's great opportunity for production jobs in this market because of the fact that there are so many products to be produced. There's virtually an unlimited number of products that could be produced. Okay. We're going to shift then. Maybe I'll stop. Because we're shifting now from industries to talking more about community capabilities. Any final questions before we shift?
Any other questions?
Okay. We're going to shift then to community capabilities. You've all seen this. This is the part that, in reality, each one of these sections, whether you're talking foundational or Navy knowledge clusters or commercialization catalysts, is a discussion in itself. It's a session in itself. We will start by talking, and we're just going to hit the highlights because we don't have time. But in enabling knowledge clusters, this is the enabling knowledge cluster is the information that people have through their educational process that allow them to understand how to work within an industry. There's also along that same line, there is a research as part of the university systems that go along to support that. In our area, and going back to Steve's comments, we look primarily to what we're presenting to you today are the enabling knowledge clusters that we found to be core, meaning these enabling knowledge clusters fit all six of these industries and are fundamental. They are nanotechnology, and I think Bob Hare is in the room someplace.
Yes.
Bob Hare is. Okay, Bob Hare, if you have questions, we'll call Bob up because he is our guru on MIN Nano organization and is leading the efforts. In fact, they just published a report last week talking about about nano and how it applies across basically all industries and where it's going, and is leading this initiative to help us get clarity around what we need to do as a state. Another one is bioinformatics. By the way, nanotech, just for if you don't know, nanotech just means it's really small. And anything you have to do with really small things kind of fits under the nanoscale. And Bob's going to poke me now because I'm oversimplifying, but it is being able to work at nano-level dimensions in all areas is really what it's about, and it's very difficult. Bioinformatics is the ability to collect information and process it, driven by the computer and software industry, but allows us to collect information at the genomics level, the proteomics level, so you can process it and put it to use in the engineering of plants and healthcare solutions, prevention of disease, those types of things. It is the enabler of a lot of the personalized medicine initiative that you all hear about. Systems biology is a shift. Systems biology is historically we've thought of the body as a series of discrete components, the heart, the lung, et cetera, or plants, the same. Systems biology is a study of how they all interact, including between species. How does food interact with humans? Those kinds of things at a systemic level. Mm-hmm. It's a way of rethinking and reprocessing information, and it changes how you look at the world. It changes how you invent. It changes how you solve problems. These three things are things that, frankly, Minnesota has great potential but is not very well established today and is getting, we feel we have to focus on all of these. So as I mentioned, Bob Hare is leading an initiative on nano. We have a relationship with IBM, Mayo, and the University of Minnesota that is leading the bioinformatics discussion, try to understand what to do there. And systems biology is being discussed at the moment, how to get our arms around that. So commercialization catalyst, I'll simply say that in the commercialization catalyst side, it's all about workforce, research, leadership, and tech transfer and incubation. Those are the areas that we really need to focus on. There is I would encourage you, if you want to get deep into this, that we bring in MinSCU and the U of M to talk about the work that they're doing in the area of workforce development as it relates to the life science industry right now. There's a large group that's been in place for a while, and they're working very heavily on that. And then finally, under policy, we'll leave you with this. K through 16, as Senator Bonhoff mentioned, we know that all of you are looking hard at this. We just want to reinforce the fact that if there isn't a solid K through 16, then none of the rest of this means anything. And you might, and that is the focus. If we don't have good kids coming out, we will not be in a good place. The second policy, though, is that we'd like to leave you with is that we do need.
So just on that point, I think I heard something over here that some of us would suggest it be E16. You might want to just think about that as an edit,
yes.
Because we believe that early childhood education is critical to making sure that our K-12 dollars and K-16 dollars are spent well, because we're intervening earlier and dealing with mm-hmm. issues earlier. So just a thought from mm-hmm. some of us on the business committee.
We'll change it.
Who serve on education. Thank you.
Thank you.
Continue.
And our last policy recommendation really is one that we need an environment that allows us to look at all aspects of business support. From discovery all the way through reinvention, and I don't think it's any surprised any of you that our business environment is not recognized around the world as being the most optimum. We could get into discussions around specific recommendations. We weren't prepared to do that today, but we can. The point that we want to make is that all the way from discovery, all the way to reinvention, we need to have policies in place that help companies to start and reinvent themselves and create the appropriate environment. And with that, I'm going to conclude with one last slide. That one last slide is we are, as we, someone had asked earlier about where do we go from here and what do we do. As an organization, we are now in what we call phase three, which is the movement forward of the BioBusiness Resource Network, which is underneath that network. We have two things going. One is we are taking initiative to drive these programs, these recommendations, and make sure we have the right people together to begin to implement and move forward. Our strategy there is that when we find a community or an organization to take the lead, we will transfer that. We don't want to recreate that. And we'll move on to the next one because there's enough for everybody to do. The second thing, though, is that we give support to companies. And I should put this slide up because we started that activity in late, about mid-2007, actually. And we did that so that we could kind of understand when June or January 29th rolls around, what do we do that morning when we get up and we begin the implementation phase? So we understand now how to plant these seeds, control these seeds, how to grow them, how to nurture them. We have supported 45 companies so far. Of that 45 companies, there was a telephone call went out asking them for an assessment of a couple of questions. One is, where are they at today with employment from the start date? And that total is about 283. And then the second question was, where will you be in about 3 years? And they're estimating a total of about 850 employees right now. The point that we're trying to make with this is that we know that the process works. We know that we know how to plant the seeds. We know how to nurture them. Partnering with DEED, partnering with the universities, and partnering with the private sectors. There is a process that does work, and so we are moving on that as we speak, and we will continue to do so. So with that, we'll leave you with this slide. We would like to, which is a repeat. We just want you to know that the plan is in place. We have some recommendations that we're acting on, and we'd like, there's some that you can really help us with. There's others the academic sector needs to help us with, and there's others the private sector has to take on. We're in a very good place to build and grow from here in the life science community, and we want to move now. It's time to be impatient. So with that, I'm going to quit and see if there's any questions.
Thank you very much. I do want to note that in some of the areas where you talked about financial incentives and mm-hmm. Policy, that we will be having a separate hearing we're talking about with some of the proposals that are coming out in terms of tax credits and incentivizing investments in Minnesota, that we talked about having a separate hearing, sort of what is this issue, sort of 101, to give us some background before we hear some of these bills. So certainly we will invite you to participate in those hearings because we're certainly hopeful that you'll be very supportive of those pieces of legislation. So that will help us understand from a policy perspective how does this work? What is sort of the phase that companies go through understanding the tech-based transfer? What are some of the challenges that small companies have? So we'll hopefully cover that for you. And I wanted to ask also if you might, Mr. Wallstrom, I know that I'm not sure I talked with you, but I talked with Mr. Lenz and I talked with Dr. Mulcahy at the U last week, that after some of us were briefed by Congresswoman McCollum on the federal stimulus package, some of us really started to focus on the infrastructure and the roads piece, but in looking at the whole package, Representative Mahoney and I were together, and we looked at there's a lot of opportunities in here for economic development, specifically in the bioscience. This was the night after we were with you, and we made some phone calls and heard you were meeting last week as a follow-up and sort of gave you some homework of it would be really great to have sort of a group of folks who represent, you know, our universities and Minsky and business to look at this list and this bill. which is sort of still in process, and have a team ready to look at that and say, where are there opportunities for Minnesota? So could you brief us a little bit? Because I do know that I got an email back on that, and we've kind of got you on hold right now, but maybe talk a little bit about your conversation there.
There's actually, I think, two parts to that conversation, mm-hmm. I believe, Senator Sullivan. One was to have a group of people identified who would represent the various mm-hmm. aspects from manufacturing through the various components. Mm-hmm. And that is a list I think Dr. McKay sent to you.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that there's a larger number under than you were looking for. What the team thought is that we probably should not pick for you,
right.
but give those who are selecting this committee the option to kind of pick what you think is best from a blend for what you're trying to accomplish. The other part of it, though, so that's kind of where that ended. And that team, once triggered, will move to start to look at what it is being put together to look at. On the other part of it, though, is in regard to this specific part of it,
mm-hmm.
Which includes the nano and some of the other things, we are compiling a list to go into that. In fact, Representative Mahoney asked for it by the end of yesterday. Gave me reprieve to get into him till the end of today.
Mm-hmm.
So as soon as I'm done here, I'm going to go disappear and try to finish that list and get it off to him and whoever else would like it. But just what we, coming out of these recommendations, what can we act on now? Where can we make a move? So, an example, in those core enabling, those core items that we talked about, one of them that's coming forward is nano.
Mm-hmm.
We're not going to be coming forward with systems biology because we're not ready. We wouldn't know exactly what to ask for. There's some work going on in bioinformatics, so that might be able to be facilitated in the southeast. So there are. That's happening, plus Mr. Lenz has sent out to some of the other regional areas asking for some of the things that they could put into that request. So those are coming in,
right.
And hopefully by the end of the day we'll have it all solid consolidated.
That's good. And there's a lot of people looking at this, but we just wanted to alert you that instead of coming to you in a few days or a week or a month and say, oh, we'd like some people we could talk to, and it takes a couple weeks to pull that group together to have some people that – could really advise the folks in the state who are looking at every single dollar that we can get. And what I hear repeatedly is that we do a great job, but sometimes we can't turn on a dime.
Yeah.
And in this situation, we're hearing you better be ready to turn on a dime, because whoever gets there first in some, like, you know, cases, mm-hmm. may be first in line to get the dollars. And we have great opportunities here. So I want to thank you for that. Are there some other questions? Senator Bonoff.
A comment, Madam Chair. I just want the presenters not to be offended at the lack of participation. It's not a reflection of the presentation, because it really was wonderful, and we really appreciate it. And it's just, you know, we all have many things that we juggle at this time.
Yeah, I understand. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Bonoff, because I do know a lot of people did note they had bills being heard in other committees, but I think that's important. One more thing, I guess, perhaps a note is that with Indeed, we have had a presentation from the Office of Science and Technology, and some of the work that we feel is important, too, is how are we looking for those federal dollars that are available to be able to help with those. And I would encourage, because I don't see that maybe reflected in this. It's something that we're doing, but we can't lose out. I can't lose sight of that, because we had an event here at the Capitol last Thursday that office sponsored, and had probably 15 companies from across the state. And it was one of those busy days where I wanted to spend more time there. But in walking through, all of them talked about the importance of being able to get some of the federal research dollars.
Mm-hmm.
Some of those are, we've also heard from the Defense Alliance, who, again, work closely with that office, where there are federal dollars that help take those companies all the way through the process. And we need to be able to find those dollars. And too often what we're finding is that there are these pots of dollars, and we need people who can help connect our companies with those dollars. So if that might be something to think about, some feedback where that might fit with this and making sure that we're working together in that. Because we are, I am a little concerned that it was not refunded in the governor's budget, and there may be some of us who would think that we should look at that as something as we do present alternatives on what we think is important. So any other questions from the committee? Well, again, and then I want to thank you so much. I think this is a start of a really important dialogue, and you did map out today. There are a couple things that we could go into more depth, and some of those may be more informal sessions, but I really do want to appreciate you. You've had two hearings today. You're all warmed up, but thank you very much. And may I ask Ms. Sparks if we're planning to meet, or Mr. Martinson, if we have committee schedules for next week yet? We will be meeting on Monday, so members, if you want to check your calendars for that. And with that, meeting adjourned.